Hey, everybody, it's me here, Michael Franti, on the Stay Human podcast. Man, we are super excited because we've got a new album that is coming out. It's called Work Hard and Be Nice. 17 songs, that's right, you heard it, 17 songs filled with optimism and stories about how we get through challenging times and still hold on to our humanity. We can't wait to get back out on the road with you guys, so stay tuned to all of my socials. You'll get the information first about when we're going to be touring next. In the meantime, enjoy all the songs on the album, Work Hard, Be Nice. You can Spotify it. You can stream it all over the place. You can download it on iTunes. You can even get the CD from michaelfranti.com. So check it out.
Above us on the stage, we've got Trevor Hall. What's up, Trevor? All right. Trevor, I am so happy to be here with you because this is Red Rocks, and it's the greatest musical venue in the entire world, I have to say.
Amen.
And we've played here before together.
Yes.
And it's always super awesome. And so I guess the first question I have for you is, what is it like for you when you just like come into Red Rocks for the first time?
You've played a lot more than me, obviously. But this, I think this is my third time. The other time I did was with you, and the first time was with John Butler. Mm-hmm. But every time, I mean, I was lucky that my parents here, just driving in, my dad's like, hey! Honey!
Oh,
hey! You
got you can just get out of here. We're going to get them in the hot seat and find out the truth.
I don't know what I'm doing here. But driving in, my dad was like, honey, take a picture of that. It's like, I got it. Honey, take a picture of this. But every time you come in, it's just, some places, it's familiar. But this one, it's just like every time it's just like,
it's the humbling. It's the angel choir that just comes out.
Everybody asks, after the show, they're like, how was your show at Red Rocks? You're like, I don't remember.
I don't.
I'm
the same way. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've been sitting on this couch and had some emotional breakdown after the show. Like, I'm being totally honest. It's like a really emotional experience. And I'm like, did I sing in key? Did I say the right things? Did the people way up in the top hear it? I have these anxiety attacks.
I don't blame you. There's so much energy that's coming through you that you're not even, it's like you're just out of your body.
Yeah, and so much anticipation. Like, we circle it on the calendar.
Yeah, your whole year revolves around like the Red Rocks date.
Yeah.
It's like, is that before or after?
I think one of the things that also makes Red Rocks interesting is that there's a lot of people who come to Red Rocks just because it's Red Rocks. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, you know, they have some connection to your music and my music. They want to be here. But there's some people who are just like, whoa, it's Red Rocks. Yeah. You know, let's go.
Yeah. Let's make the trip.
Just to be here, and make a trip out of it.
Absolutely.
So that's really cool. Yeah. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in South Carolina.
South Cackalacky.
South Cackalacky. Nice. I don't know if anybody else knew that. I usually say that, but I didn't want to throw you off.
I read your bio.
Oh, shit.
No, South Carolina. So you were born there?
No, I was born in Connecticut, and then we moved to South Carolina when I was two or three. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Dad.
I don't remember too much of Connecticut, but we grew up, it was a really small town, it's an island.
And when you say small, do you mean like hundreds of people or like
thousands?
35,000. 35,000,
yeah.
Okay. Dad's got stats.
Well, yeah, thanks, Dad. Helping me out.
How many assists did Kevin Durant average during the playoffs?
He doesn't have it.
He probably know if I didn't say. So South Carolina, what do you remember about being a kid, like a little wee kid there?
It was
I didn't come out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
A wee
about
little
that.
Kid.
Yeah.
Not a little wee kid.
I don't know. All right. Yeah, Mike. No, it was like, it was mellow, you know. It was like real, like I said, it was small, but like it was a community where everybody, you know, type of community where, you know, you're driving your car and you almost know everybody in that part.
Yeah.
And but it was very outdoors, you know. I grew up just like surfing and skateboarding and just like just kind of really sweet, humble, just good community to grow up
in. And did you go all through high school there?
Well, I went to I went till I think about 9th grade, and then 10th grade I went to a boarding school, art school in California. Wow, and that's cool. When I was started like studying guitar and stuff.
Was music always a part of your life as a kid? Like, do you remember music when you're like 4 or 5 years
old? Yeah, my dad is a drummer, we call him the jammer. So, he said that that you had his kungas already set up during your show.
I do. We're already up there. They're ready for you, jammer.
Yeah. He was like, "Do you think Michael's gonna like these shades all black?" I said, But he was a drummer, and I remember he had this massive record collection in our hallway. And as a kid, like I would.
What
just,
are those?
Just like vinyl, you know?
What are those?
Oh, so it's before your time.
Okay.
It's before your time. But I would pull out anything that looked cool and I'd put it on the stereo. And I remember we had this living room and I would have like a broom and I'd stand in front of the speakers and pretend I was in the Allman Brothers or something like
that. Oh, really? So that was it? Like Greg
Allman. Allman Brothers, Doobie Brothers. I mean,
any Crosby kind of brothers. Christmas.
Any kind of
the
brothers.
Marx Brothers. The Smothers Brothers. The Blues Brothers.
Any type of brother.
The Splash Brothers. So you'd listen and you'd emulate.
Yeah.
Would you get in front of the mirror or would you just rock it right there?
I would just rock. I remember whenever they would have dinner parties, I would pretend to be like in a band.
So you were already entertaining at the dinner party.
Luckily, there weren't iPhones available at that time. No videos or recordings.
You know what I used to do is really horrible. But, you know, when I was a kid in my house, there was so much different types of music. Everything from like Al Green to P-Funk to punk rock to reggae. But when I was really little, my family used to go every whatever night of the week it was on Tuesday to watch the Partridge Family. I had these like Partridge Family fantasies, and I'd get in the shower and I'd take the hand towel and I'd get it wet in the shower and then I'd put it on like I had long hair like Keith Partridge. I'd bring a tennis racket into the bathroom and I'd start like air guitar and this hair and I'd swing it back and forth. And then I'd hand the hand towel back up, and I'd just leave the tennis racket in the bathroom. And my mom would be like, "Why is the hand towel soaking wet again?" And what is the tennis racket doing in the bathroom? So you graduated from like performing at your parents' dinner parties into what? What was the next musical evolution for you?
I think I started writing songs, you know. I was into the kind of punk rock thing, you know, being 13, 14, whatever. And my dad surprised me for my, 15th birthday? 15th birthday, my dad took me to a recording studio, his friend's recording studio.
Crazy.
And I recorded this, like, punk rock song I wrote.
Yeah.
And that was kind of that was my first like experience, like, whoa, this is like how you do it.
Yeah.
You know? And it was just really beautiful. And then I think the following year we did like a whole album.
Wow.
But it was just like, oh, for my friends or something. Like I just wanted to surf and skateboard. Yeah. Like wasn't thinking.
Was it punk rock or was it?
No, by that time I was getting into like surf culture and like Jack Johnson, Ben Harper and some guy, I forget it, from
Frank Fredericksburg.
That was it.
Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
I want to just switch a little bit. Like, what was happening in your life at that time that was inspiring who you are today? Because I think of you as like a troubadour of compassion and of social justice and of looking out for the poorest people on the planet. When did that kick in for you? Was that something that was in your house as you were growing up, or did you feel it when you were a teenager, or did you feel it, experience it through punk rock, or what was it that started to wake that up for you?
I think ever since I was a kid, I was like really like seeking connection, and I didn't necessarily know what that connection was, you know? And I think music was the thing that like just helped me tap into something that I that was beyond me. Mm-hmm. You know?
Did you feel like an outsider as a kid or as a
teenager? I totally did. I mean, yeah. I mean, I went to a prep school in South Carolina, and you know, they didn't really. It wasn't as I think celebratory of the arts, you know. So I definitely felt a little weird. I was always trying to be different. I think that's why that punk rock stage was so important to me, because it was just like rebel, and I just wanted to get out of my
skin. And how did other kids respond to you in that time?
I think it was, you know, I hung out with the kids that liked punk rock.
All so, two of them at the prep school.
All two or three of them. But you know, it was like I said, it was a good community. You know, I always had the support of the community.
Yeah.
But I was just seeking connection, and then I think when I kind of got into surfing, that became a connection. Mm-hmm. You know, to
what
something
drew you bigger. To it? What was it about surfing?
I think I just growing up on an island. It was just one of the things to do, and then that was around that time. That's when, you know, Jack Johnson came out with that first album, and I was watching his films, and I was just the whole lifestyle of being one with the ocean and nature. That was a connection.
So it wasn't really like I want to be Kelly Slater. I want to like compete.
No.
It was like I want to be in the water.
And I was really into creating. I really wanted to like. Do was what Jack was doing. I wanted to make videos.
Who doesn't want to do what Jack Johnson
travel the world and surf,
make cool music. But never talk about this.
Yeah,
it's a good volume. Jack's playing tonight. Do you know that he's here in Denver?
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh my God! I didn't know
that.
I didn't know that. His ears must be ringing. But that was the moment. And then from there, like the big kind of I think what do you call that, like catalyst moment or whatever was. When I heard a Ben Harper album, because I heard something that he was so radical and, you know, social rights and like, I was just like, whoa, this can be much bigger than just being up there. And that's the point, I think. That's probably the biggest influence I can say from my youth was when I first heard Ben.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on. I love Ben.
Yeah.
So, what was the hardest thing for you as a kid? Like, what was the most challenging thing that you faced, like, inside here, emotionally, you know?
Emotionally, I mean, I think the hardest part was being this, like, just crazy, artistic kid in an environment that not necessarily was, like, where that was like okay, you know, because in that the environment that I grew up in, it was a beautiful place, beautiful people, but it was very just like, you know, you go to school, then you get into a college, preferably close to South Carolina, you know, you wear your polo shirt, you play golf, tennis, you know, it was just, not that those things are bad, but it was just like, that was the thing.
Yeah.
And if anybody was stepping outside of that, it was just awkward.
Yeah.
And me, in my mind, being so young, because when you're young, you don't know how to so much process your emotions. It was, is what I'm doing, is that wrong? Or am I, I'm taking a risk here type of thing. But ironically, when I did take the risk, you know, I got so much support and love, but it was that time of not knowing how to navigate those things as you're so young, and the pressures of just kind of conforming to.
Did it fuel your drive more, or did it fuel your anxiety?
I think actually, to be honest, I think it confused me a lot more than it kind of drove me. I definitely had a lot of passion. But it confused me.
Yeah.
And I think, to be honest, even now, you know, I'm much older, I can still trace certain, I think, ways that I respond to things, like, back to that stage.
Yeah.
So it's a constant, you know, healing and evolving and practice. And but that was probably the toughest thing, was just being kind of confused.
Yeah. So let's fast forward a little bit more, even before we get into music. You travel a lot. You spend a lot of time outside of the States. Did you do that as a teenager, or is it something that happened later in life?
Well,
has it changed you?
Well, that was I think why my family like was so different in that community mm-hmm. because my mom and dad were like very, very big on getting us off the island. You know? Like literally.
Sounds like you could have easily been voted off the island. Yeah,
I
know.
I would have been voted off. But they were really big on getting us out, you know. So we went to Ecuador. We went to mm-hmm. the Galapagos. We went to Hawaii, you know. We went to Canada. We were always, you know, we went to Costa Rica, mm-hmm. you know. They were always exposing us to the ways other people were living. And mm-hmm. I think that's also what, you know, that kind of healed me because yeah. when I was confused, I'm like, oh, this isn't the only way to do things. Because yeah. I went over here and, you know, not everybody's you going to College of Charleston, being. You know? Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, oh, shoot, okay, I don't have to do that. Okay, cool. So that was real special. And I think they really gave me that travel bug. Yeah. And I just continued.
Nice.
Once I, you know, graduated and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So how has India changed you? I know you go there yeah. like pretty much every year, I think.
Yeah.
What was the first time you went there?
It was crazy. It's, you know, it's funny, like to preface that, I remember when I was leaving South Carolina to go to this arts boarding school, this mm-hmm. liberal arts boarding school. Oh my God. And I remember, I don't know if it was my uncle or my dad's friend or I don't know who it was, but he was like, you know, Trevor, you got to be careful out there in California. You know, there's literally, it was like, there's a lot of crazy people out there. There's a lot of cults, Trevor, you know. And he said, before you know it, you know, you're going to have dreadlocks and tattoos. And yeah. So
it wasn't me.
So, you know, that, you know, sure enough, you know, a couple years later, I come back with dreads and tattoos. But I'm from South Carolina. I never expected to like be influenced by India.
Right.
Like I just never thought of it. You know, I was in high school and at this boarding school and I became really good friends with this kid named Sam and he was mm-hmm. like a rapper and mm-hmm. we kind of formed this little like group duo yeah. thing. We were making beats in the dorm room and one night he said, you know, oh, can you come into, why don't you spend the night in my dorm because we lived in different dorms and we can make music all night. And I saw a picture on his wall and it was a picture of this saint from India
yeah.
and I just immediately was like, what's that? Yeah. Like my insides was like so familiar. And so long story short, I asked him about the saint and his parents were with the saint in India and all this stuff in the 70s. And I just fell in love with this person that I didn't yeah. even meet physically. And because that person was from India, I wanted to know about India,
yeah.
you know, because that person was, you know, into doing all this meditation. I wanted to know about that.
Yeah.
And that's how it kind of stemmed from that. And then in 2007... I went to India for the first time, and I remember right when I got off the plane, it was like...
How old were you at that point?
I was 20.
Okay.
Yeah, and I went with a couple monks from this temple in California. And, yep. The cult. I went yeah. with the cult leaders. And we landed in Delhi, and it was like 2 in the morning, and I remember I walked outside, and I was just like... Oh my God!
Yeah.
Like the hit of the culture, the shock yeah. was like crazy.
We're
like
not I'd never in Carolina seen anymore.
I'm not in South Carolina, and I'd never even been that far. Like I remember yeah. flying over there. I was like, you know, we had to stop in Taiwan, and I was okay. like, oh my God, this is crazy. I'm so far. Yeah. But I remember like when we got there, I was just like, this is it.
Yeah,
this is my place.
Yeah,
you know, and.
That's what did you do? Happened. Where did you go?
We went to, you know, the monks that I went with, mm-hmm. the cult leaders that I was went with, they had been there a bunch of times before. And so we went to a lot of just different temples and holy places. We went. Mm-hmm. We first went to a place called Rishikesh where the Beatles
sure.
were at.
Yeah.
And we hung out there for like...
With the Beatles? Were they there?
Yeah, they were there in astral planes.
Okay.
Yeah. And from there, we went to this place called Allahabad, which is where the Kumbh Mela happens.
Uh-huh, sure.
And at that point, the Kumbh Mela, it's this... largest gathering of humanity in the world. It only happens every 12 years. But at that point, it was the half mark. It was the 6-year mm-hmm. mark. And there was like, I don't know, it was crazy. There was so many people there, Michael. I can't even. It was just wild, but it was just so much. It was just so much that I remember I left from there. I went to Calcutta for one day. I was only there for three weeks. And I got back on the plane, and I remember I was just so, I didn't sleep the whole way back. Mm-hmm. I was so amped. And I flew back in. I was living in California at the time. Came back to California, got in my apartment all by myself. You know, I'm 20 years old and just had this mind. I want to tell somebody. Yeah, oh, my God, you know. Yeah. And I remember I walked into the supermarket, and I had a full-on anxiety attack.
Whoa.
I walked in front of the bread, and and I was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, because over there, you know, it's like, it's so simple, you know, and people, you know, if you don't have, you know, there's one type of broccoli, you know, not organic, not GMO, no, it's one type. And if they don't have broccoli that day, then you don't have broccoli, you know?
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know what it was, but I walked back in and I like ran out of there. Yeah. It was crazy. The culture shock was definitely coming back. It always is, even now, every time I go.
So then let's talk about your music. So during this time, were you writing, singing, recording? Or,
Yeah, it was actually a really confusing time. Confusion seems to be a theme. But right when I graduated high school, I signed this big record deal with Geffen Records, you know, like the dream thing, you know, and I got all this money and I'm like 18 years old and had no idea what I was doing, you know. Yeah. And got this big apartment on the beach in L.A. and recorded this record and all these different people telling me how I should sound. And, you know,
it was, and in your mind, did you think, well, this is it. I'm gone.
I mean, right? That's, you know, that's what you think,
right? We're putting out the record. Next Friday, we're playing Red Rocks.
Pretty much. Yeah. It was this trajectory, you know. And it all just crumbled, you know. I remember the president that time left. Our album got shelved. I ran out of money. I was 18. I had no friends. I was living in L.A. I was super lonely. It was kind of a dark time. And then a new president came in, and they said, we're not going to drop you. But
Trump? Was it Trump?
It was. No, not yet.
Okay. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah. But a new president came in and said, we're not going to drop you, but we don't like your album. We want you to do another one.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, whatever. And this is over the course of a couple years, you know. So my whole life was kind of on pause because of the label. And then we did another album, and then I went to India. And when I got back, they dropped me.
Yeah.
Over the course of 3 years. Wow. So,
how did that feel?
It was crazy. I mean, I remember just the hardest part of it all was having people or fans say, like, when are you going to give us new music?
Yeah.
And me having all this music and not being able to give it to people, which is music. It's the most free, accessible, you know, because of people that they don't even know me.
Yeah.
They don't even know who I was. Yeah,
or
you
what
know?
You're about or what's you know, in your heart.
That was the most frustrating thing. And to be honest, when I got dropped, I was like stoked. I was like, finally, let's do something. Yeah. Let's put something out. You know? And that was right around the time when I jumped on tour with you in 2009.
Yeah.
So I was in that whole period for like 3 to 4 years.
Wow.
We finally put out an album and I went on tour with you in the fall. Yeah. 2009, and our first show, I don't know if you remember, was in Flagstaff, Arizona at the Orpheum Theater.
Yeah, I remember,
and I remember I got there, I was like, oh my God, you know, and your TM at the time, I remember he said, okay, you can't go here, can't come back here, don't, you know, all this stuff, and I was just like, oh my God, but can I like say hi to him? All this stuff.
That's why that guy doesn't work with me anymore.
No, but you know, you just like, and Michael, I remember Michael, you know, we were in the dressing room. Our dressing room was right by the stage, and he had to walk by our dressing room, and he was kicking a soccer ball. And he was walking on stage kicking the soccer ball. And I remember he's so much taller than I thought he'd be. And he just was super, you were just so nice.
And I'm way taller than on the podcast. Yeah. So that's for sure.
But that was our first show.
Yeah.
Orpheum Theater in Flagstaff. Yeah. And I was just like, I can't believe I'm doing this for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. So it was awesome.
Hey, everybody. It's Michael Franti here on the Stay Human podcast. A few years back, my wife, Sarah, and I decided that we would start a nonprofit with the intention of bringing people with advanced stages of life-threatening illness, children and adults with special needs, and wounded veterans to see any live concert by any artist in any city in the world. And from that, Do It For The Love was born. If you have a friend or family member who needs music in that way, just write to us at doitfortholove.org, and we'll make sure to get them out to see any concert in any city by any artist. Do it for the love, y'all.
Awesome. Yeah. I remember seeing you and just being really, really impressed with a couple of things. Just like your voice, for one. You have like an incredible timbre to your voice. But also just that you were somebody who was, I felt, in music at that time, there were very few people who were speaking about anything. And most of the bands that we were playing with were, at that time, were... And I had come up through punk rock, where I was on the Dead Kennedys record label. There was a lot of like really aggressive, angry political music that I believed in everything it stood for, but I didn't like that it was so left everything else out. Like, if you differed from that holier than thou, right on DIY, we do it this way, you know, thing. I didn't like that, but I believed in everything that was it about. And then I came into hip hop, which was the opposite. It was like, you know, I found myself on tour like Busta Rhymes and Tribe Called Quest and Cypress Hill. And their stuff was like about, like Cypress Hill was like gang banging and smoking weed. And that stuff was kind of like fun to hear about, but it wasn't where I was coming from, and had never had that experience. And so then I got into like this sort of like jam band and festival world, but there wasn't really like, frankly, a lot of lyrics even. There was just like songs about, there was about the emotion of music, which I really liked too. And so there was parts of all of it that I really liked. But then when I saw you, I was like, whoa, here's somebody who's coming up through the scene who I feel is like a brother in wanting to make music that challenges and also wants to make music that invites people in to share in these ideals of, you know, compassion and reaching out to each other and diversity and acceptance of diversity. And so I was really like stoked to have you on tour, and it only lasted 2 weeks, and I was like, get that guy back, we want that camera guy, man. Who's this other man we're out with, you know?
Yeah, that was a beautiful time. I mean, I remember that was right when Say Hey came out.
Yeah,
it was that new album. So it was just amazing for us to be, you know, it was amazing anyway, but it was just amazing to kind of like be on that swing with you, because it was just, God, I was just popping off so hard. And I think, you know, even for me, you're saying all this stuff, but if, you know, for me, I remember that first show in Orpheum Theater. I was just like, this guy is like the Energizer Bunny. Like, I was like, oh my, I've never seen a show though with that. You know, one of my favorite things about playing music is when something happens, when it's going really well. I'm sure you can relate, when you're playing and that line of performer and audience just kind of evaporates, and we're all just listening together, you know, because really that's what we're doing, you know, we're just listening to what's coming through. And there's this beautiful unity that happens, and you're just swimming in it, and you're not even thinking, you're just swimming. And I remember that first show at the Orpheum Theater. I had never seen, up until that point, that line erased so quickly. I mean, it was like Michael came running on the stage, and first thing, I want to see everybody jumping! And I was like, and everybody was with them, you know? And so that to be especially being how young I was, it was just a beautiful seed to be planted in my life, my musical career, to just see like, God, you know, I hope when I'm, you know, I wish I could do that now. You know, I'm like, I don't know how much younger I am, but I can't keep up with you now, but I hope I can do it when I'm at your age. So it was just special.
Thanks, man. That was a really great tour for us too, and we were really stoked to, you know, have been following you since that time and seen your growth so much. What is your musical mission? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you want to bring to the world through music?
Oh, man. I think that, you know, the things that have inspired me in my life are obviously, you know, storytelling. Yeah. And we don't have that as much, especially in our Western culture anymore. But, you know, things that the way that I've been inspired in my life to do whatever good or try to be good is through other people, you know, sharing their art and sharing their mission. And I don't like to pigeonhole it in one thing, like, oh, I hope people will, you know, I don't know, do whatever. It's just, even if it's just to give them a 5-minute break in their day, man, something as simple as that, you know, like those simple things are overlooked. And me growing up, you know, music was such a shelter for me. I mean, I remember my mom was always, you know, getting mad at me because I always had my Discman with me at, like, you know, we go out to dinner and I'm like, she's like, Trevor, take those things off and participate, you know. But it was, I couldn't let it go because it was such a shelter.
Because the devil cult leaders had a hold of you.
Yeah, hold me, yeah.
All right, I want to open up to an audience question. Who's got a question here?
Oh, there you go.
Uh-huh. Hearing the story about Wishman.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's...
Right.
Once I hear that story, then usually that song means something for me entirely different moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm bicycle riding here in our Rocky Mountains, and I am running low on oxygen and so many other things, Belagalo comes into my head a lot, and I just chant it over and over. So what is the meaning behind that?
That's a good question. That the Belagalo... it's a Bengali word, which is a region of India that I spent a lot of time in, and it's taken from a folk song about Radha and Krishna, or two of the gods in India, and the original song is told from the point of Radha, right, the lover, the female who's pining for her beloved, and she's saying, "Oh, I'm standing here, and the sun is setting, and Krishna told me that he would return." But he hasn't, and here I am. I'm holding this garland for him, and the leaves are withering, and Belagalo. And Belagalo means time is running out, right? But on a deeper level, it's the individual soul yearning for that supreme soul, right? And it's actually a kind of a call to action, like, don't waste your life. Like, time is running out, you know, make use of your life, you know, cultivate love and peace and all those positive qualities within yourself. Realize who you are, because you're not just, you know, some, I mean, we are human beings, but in reality, we're much more than that. We're stainless, we're changeless. And we don't take birth and we don't die. And so that it's a kind of it's a song that inspired by that folk song of, hey, Belagalo, time is running out, you know, just grab the bull by the horns and let's do this.
See, if you'd explained that to the president of Geffen Records back in the day, they would have been like, get this record out this week, right now. All right, who's got another question? You got a question?
So okay. It's kind of along the same lines, but one of the things that I find for me is, you know, the world's gone a little crazy lately, and music is a happy place for me. And so oftentimes, you know, at 6 a.m. driving, I work in an elementary school, I'll crank up a song, and it'll turn my head around, and I can get on with the day. Thank you, Michael. So, Trevor, if I were to turn on one of your songs, give me a song.
Oh, God. I don't know. I think Wishman's a good morning song, right? That's a good song. Unity's a good song, yeah.
Green Mountain State. That's my go-to one for morning.
Yeah, Green Mountain's a good morning. If you're driving to school, yeah. Rock that. Green Mountain or Unity, yeah.
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 Yeah, you're welcome.
All his songs, though. He's got so many great songs, yeah. All right, Trevor, you want to play a tune for us?
Sure.
Right on.
All right,
let's see if we can get this. I don't know if that bad boy is in tune. There's a tuner there if you'd like.
There's a tuner.
Oh, there's one in the box.
That punk song, you know, was I don't remember the verses as much, but it was like, oh, my dad.
My dad has it. Jammer. We need some drums.
Yeah, we need some drums.
We need some drums.
Jammer.
See what you get? You come here, and this is like, I mean, what'd you guys pay, like $300 each to be at this podcast? And look at the added value you're getting.
But the, I don't know the verse, but it, the chorus was, I can't even sing that high anymore.
Yeah.
We are family. All my punks and me. My single.
Yeah. You should sell out the Blink 182. This is,
All right, I'll play a song. I'll play kind of a new tune.
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Do you want,
no.
Anyone? Okay.
Do whatever you want, man.
All right. This was written about a place on Big Island, Hawaii, called Hamakua. It's the coastline on the eastern side. The ancient sadness of separation, the forgetting of who we are. I had that feeling so divided, couldn't see my inside stars. But on the coastline of Hamakua, there was a washing of my bones. Oh, Mama Pele, oh, Mama Pele, come and pull me in back. Where the fire meets the water, I had a glimpse of blue sky mine. Like the Mauna gives a reminder, standing strong in changing times. She gave me laughter, rhyme, and music to clean my aching heart. Mama Pele, oh Mama Pele, come and tell us who we are. Oh, Hamakua, oh, come and pull me in. Oh, Hamakua. A time of rain and thunder, we exchanged our sacred breath. Then he gifted us their water as we watched it all connect. The doubting of our essence, such a silly thing to Oh Mama Pele, oh Mama Pele, come and gift us sacred tears. Oh, Hamakua, oh, come and pull me in. Oh, Hamakua.
Sir. That is a beautiful song. Wait a minute, don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. Get over here. You trying to go to the bathroom or something? No, get over here. I want, sorry, you got to get over here too.
Oh, right. Shoot.
We're going to flip the script on this a little bit, okay? I want to talk about marriage. I want to talk about... Get over here. Come on. I'm serious. I want you in this. I want to talk about marriage because I got to say, being married and being a musician and traveling all the time is not easy. It takes a lot of work, takes a lot of energy. And I follow you guys closely on social media. And you guys do a lot of things together. Like I feel like you're what you were describing as your musical mission before, bringing music to people that helps them to get through challenging moments in their life. Mm-hmm. I feel like you share that and you guys, it's more than just like, oh, she supports him. It's like, it's something that you really do together. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if you could both just like talk about it. Like, what are some of the challenges of being married together on the road or whatnot, or being apart at times? And then how do you guys do it together? Well, that too. That's why that'll get us a lot more views. But your mom's going, lena, 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 lena. how do you guys do this together?
You know, I think when you're like being with him being a musician, like if I couldn't go on the road with him, it would be really hard to make a marriage work because it's just so much time, you know, spent separate. But when we do travel together, I think one of the challenges would be just finding your own individuality in, you know, a rhythm where you're so enmeshed, like 24/7, you know, because you're in the van together, you're backstage together. The whole day is, you know, together, and it's hard to find your individuality in that process. But the beauty of it is when you can make it a really collaborative process where you're both lifting each other up. And I think one of the beautiful things that we've been able to find that helps us strike a balance is that I'm a photographer, and I can shoot on the road and really, like, develop my art as he's expressing his art to other people. So that's the beauty, is when you can collaborate as individuals lifting each other up. It's the challenge is, you know, like maintaining that individuality in a time when you're just always together.
Awesome. You know? Yeah. I'm gonna let Sara jump in. You can speak to that, and if you'd like, and then also ask a question of these two here.
Well, you want me to speak to the challenges?
Sure.
Well, I mean, I definitely can relate to that. I think what Michael and I have in common is our passion for social justice.
Yeah.
But we also do a lot of business together. And so I found that when we're in our lows or we feel least connected in our relationship is when we're always talking about work.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's like, what's your schedule? What's this? Have you done that? Have you been there? Did you answer that email? You know? And so, and when you're not together on tour, when you only have like 15 minutes to talk that day or something, and then you have to decide, well, what am I going to commit those 15 minutes to?
Yeah.
Because days are really full and like things come up.
Yeah.
And so I had to be really conscious to like, be like, well, I'm just going to shoot the shit for those 15 minutes.
Right.
And I'm not going to go through my list of things that have to be answered.
Yeah. Totally.
So, and someone actually, it's funny because we were just talking a couple of days ago. Someone said, well, isn't the expression true that distance makes the heart grow fonder? And I was like, not really. I was like, that expression is only true if you both commit to maintaining communication.
I think that was kind of they screwed the thing up. The cliche is actually distance makes the heart grow hornier.
Maybe so, maybe
just,
so.
Just
yeah.
Just lay it out there.
Do you have a question for them?
Well, I was just going to say that, I mean, you guys bring such sweetness, and you see a lot of sweetness in your relationship. So when you are together 24-hour days, like, what do you do? Because, so you said that you do photography, and you must shoot Trevor.
A lot.
And I was going to say, because sometimes...
Why wouldn't you?
But, because sometimes I'll come on the road and I'm very quick to be like, well, I can do that. I'll help you with that because I know how to do it. Right. But then if our art is different, we're two different people, our personas are very different. And so then we start butting heads. So like, how do you do that? Like if you're shooting, do you shoot Trevor? Do you go and like shoot other things or do other jobs while you're on this tour? Like, I want to hear more about that.
I love shooting you. I really do. He makes it really fun and easy. And the cool thing is we go to so many cool places. So when I need a moment just for myself, I kind of will like go out and just shoot the town that we're in or shoot the mountains, like especially out here in Colorado and stuff. And that helps strike a balance. But I just kind of love shooting, even if it is just them every night over and over again. It's cool. And then I get lost in my own little editing world on the computer and just steal a moment for myself, you know. But yeah, you make it fun and easy, really. And we get to go to such beautiful places. So it's so fun.
And you have your prints for sale, right? When
yes.
he goes on tour. And you have a website as well.
Yes.
What's your website?
EmeryHall.com.
Okay.
Yeah. My passion is obviously shooting, you can see, over in Asia and just travel photography and stuff. But it's kind of cool to bring like my love of travel to America going on the road with him. So it was a really cool marriage when we were just getting together and like, how are we going to make this work? I was like, oh, I'm just used to running around, you know, in Asia with my backpack. Now I'll just do it in a tour van with a bunch of dudes.
Speaking of that, on our Soulshine tour,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah.
She was one gal in a bus of 11 guys.
Wow.
For a month and a half. I'm sure you can relate.
But it's funny because before I had met them, Michael had met Trevor, or I mean, I guess you guys had a way longer friendship than I even realized,
yeah.
but Michael was like, you know, Trevor Hall, he just got married, and look at this beautiful wedding photo, and it was them, and they had like flower garland, a traditional Indian wedding,
yeah.
and you would have thought they got married in India, and I think you guys got married in like LA, or where'd you guys get married?
Laguna.
Yeah. And we weren't engaged quite yet, but like, I just remember being like, oh my gosh, they're such a beautiful couple, and like,
yeah.
I hope we one day could have such a beautiful like moment to capture our love. So now every time I see you guys, I think of that photo that you sent Michael that day.
He texted me on our honeymoon, I remember.
Yeah. yeah.
That's when you asked us to
Michael's
come to
very
Bali.
Intrusive like that.
He didn't get back to me until the next morning. So, Trevor, we got just a little bit more time here. And I ask people the same question at the end of this podcast. It's called the Stay Human Podcast. So I ask people, what is it that you do? And you can answer this too, Emery. What is it that you do to hold on to your humanity in the world that is so dehumanizing at times? You know, we're just treated like numbers, or you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, or you're an Indian, or you're an American. Like, how do you hold on to your humanity? How do you stay human?
I've always loved that, stay human. But I don't know if, you know, sometimes for me, I can get overwhelmed when I'm looking at all the different things going on. It's like, oh my God, like, I want to do this and I want to do that. And I want to, you know, and how can I make a change or, you know, but I think one of the most powerful ways you can stay human and honestly make a change is in this present moment and just being present with people and just saying, hey, how you doing?
Mm.
You know, like, if you go to a gas station or you're at the, I mean, we travel so much, you know, you go to the airport and just, you know, when you go to check in for your bags and that woman, you know, they can either be in a really bad mood or they can be, hey, how's your day going?
Yeah.
Just those little things, man, you know, that I think are so overlooked.
Yeah.
Like looking in somebody's eyes and being present and say,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
You know, like, thank you for inviting us to play here. Like,
yeah.
So that person knows that you are with them. You know, I had my best friend in high school, my senior year, his name was Adrian. And his dad was like this crazy, like Buddhist, like saint, really. He was really an amazing person. But I would always come in with my drama into the dorm room and I'd just spill it. And he wouldn't say anything to me, but he was, I knew 110% he was just listening to me.
Yeah.
people just want to be heard, you know? Yeah. And so if you're just present with somebody mm-hmm. and you just say, and they know you're listening and yeah. they're not distracted, I just think that's one of the best ways for change, because I think we're drifting from being human.
Yeah.
And staying human means just stay human. Stay just connected. Be with somebody yeah. and just yeah. be human. Doesn't need to be like, I need to donate
yeah.
$10 million to a thing. You know, mm-hmm. it's all the small things. That's what I think is one of the problems. All the small things are being overlooked.
Yeah.
You know, so just being present with people, saying, I love you, mm-hmm. thank you, you know, yeah. those types of things.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, anything to add to that?
Yeah, just to go along with what you said, I think it's just important to remember that being human is not an individual journey. Mm-hmm. It's a collaborative and co-creative journey. And like staying human is remembering that we're human and that person behind the counter in the gas station, like you said, or that person on the street, they're human too, and we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. And that's what really grounds me out, because we can feel this society, especially in the West, is just so hyper individualized yeah. and so isolating. Mm-hmm. And we need to fight that. I really do. I feel like it's a constant practice to really just remember community and the importance of community and how we as like how our ancestors lived, and not forget that in our, you know, white picket fence in lives. Mm-hmm. And another just medicine that I think we've both found is laughter. Mm-hmm. Like just remembering to laugh, because if you turn on the news, it can get you so defeated. Mm-hmm. And just laugh with one another and just laugh at yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's really important, I think.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. All right, so Sarah and I own a retreat center called Soulshine Bali, yoga retreat center in Bali. You've been there. And I've been doing these sort of music/yoga retreats mm-hmm. that are awesome with Gina Caputo, who's here. And I think it would be great if you guys did one. Like the two of you pairing up with a yoga teacher, acoustic music at night. You play a little bit in the yoga class. And then swim and eat coconuts and hang out in the rice fields and go surfing.
Don't have to fight me on that.
So I'm putting it out to the universe, because I think it'd be a really great fit for you guys. And if anybody who's listening to this podcast is interested, just, you know, write to us, email, keep a dialogue going about this, and we'll make it happen in the next year or so. All right. Yeah. Yeah. You could teach photography there too. That would be incredible. Bali is a great place for that. So, thank you so much for being here on the Stay Human Podcast. If you want to follow Trevor on Instagram, it's Trevor Hall Music. And check him out wherever you see him. Thank you so much, Trevor.
Thank you so much, Trevor. Thank you.
Hey everybody, this is Michael Franti here on the Stay Human Podcast, and I've traveled all throughout the world, and I've been to many inspiring places, and one of my favorites is Bali. I fell in love with its people and nature the first time that I came here in 2007, and at that time, I had a dream to build a place that was dedicated to music, soul, and wellness. And from that, the Soulshine Bali Hotel was born. It's my boutique hotel located in the heart of Bali, surrounded by beautiful rice fields and the most incredible sunsets that you might ever experience. We do over 50 retreats a year, or you can just come here and spend a night on your own. So follow us on Instagram @SoulshineBali.